And Jayadeva Goswami says that just listen to this glorious description by the poet Jayadeva, namely himself, which by hearing will give happiness and auspiciousness in this otherwise miserable material world, the world of birth and death. The description of Lord Keshava, who has assumed 10 forms. Jai Jagadisha, all glories to He who is the Lord of the universe and the Hari who takes everything away. Reading through this, there's a lot of bloodshed in here, in these few verses here. Prabhupada once commented that if we hear about Krishna's Vrindavan Leela, generally people think, and of course it's true, Krishna's Vrindavan Leela is very charming, very sweet. But actually, if you see numerically, the killing pastimes are much more than the dancing pastimes in the descriptions. Actually, if we are to measure in time, Krishna is beyond time. He's the controller of time. He does what he likes with time. So when he has his dancing pastimes, it goes on for a long time. When he's dancing, one night goes by, one night of Lord Brahma goes by. He's dancing. And then even then the gopis are saying, gopis don't like Lord Brahma. He made these eyes that were blinking. We try and look at Krishna, we're blinking. And then the night comes to an end. Even if it's the night of Lord Brahma, they don't like that. But in terms of descriptions of pastimes, we find Krishna's killing pastimes are more. He's killing so many demons in Vrindavan. Prabhupada also commented that in history there are two famous battles. Of course, if we see the history that we learn, I don't know what they teach at school nowadays, but there are so many famous battles. In Britain, we learn about British history, glorious Britain, how they went and harassed different countries all over the world. So we learn about so many battles, but in the history of the world, from the Puranic perspective, there are two great battles, the Battle of Lanka and the Battle of Kurukshetra. And in both of them, the hero was a Vaishnava. So Prabhupada often used to say this, that Vaishnavism doesn't mean non-violence, necessarily. It doesn't mean weakness. But the most famous books, or the most famous narrations, the Ramayana and Mahabharata, they both culminate in big wars. And in both cases, the hero is a Vaishnava, Hanuman, and then again Arjuna. Hanuman, of course, he was also there at Kurukshetra, roaring on Arjuna. And just by his roaring, so many of the Kuru soldiers, they'd just be blown over and killed just by Hanuman's roaring. So he's so powerful. So in Mason, what is this? Killing. We have this Varaha. He's fighting, killing Hiranyaksha. And then a description of Narahari, Keshava Drita, Narahari Rupa, with his beautiful nails. We say, oh, that sounds nice. Beautiful nails. There are so many different varieties of nail polish. The other day I saw on the plane there was some woman who looked like, as the saying goes, one foot in the grave, but both of her feet were covered with nail polish. So she's still trying to look attractive, even though, I mean, nails anyway aren't very attractive, but when the woman's about 80 years old, even less so. But she's trying to fool herself and others that her nails are beautiful. But Lord Narahari's nails are beautified with the blood from the chest and the stomach of Hiranyakashipu. That appears very beautiful. Mm. Prabhupada, he also mentioned in that, so there's so many battles described in Srimad Bhagavatam, so sometimes it's described Krishna, he's fighting, and then so many people killed, and there are rivers of blood, and in that river the heads are like, the heads of slain men are like fish, and the elephants are like islands, and it's a description like this, that he said, to the squeamish, it appears horrible, and to the valiant, to the kshatriyas, they'll become excited. Oh, sounds great, let's go and join them. Kulashekhar Alva, he was hearing, Ram is going to fight. And he said, okay, we're going too. He's a king. Get these soldiers ready. Let's go. So they fear. Balaram also, he was feeling frustrated that now there's going to be a fight. And of course, actually he favored Duryodhana. So he's Duryodhana Guru. With the club. He taught him club fighting. But at the same time, he can't go against Krishna. So he's frustrated that, there's a big fight and I can't take part in it. So he became a sadhu instead. Before Arjuna. Krishna, he chastised Arjuna that you don't want to fight. You have to fight. Arjuna was in the same, I sympathize with both sides. I don't want to fight. And Krishna chastised Arjuna that, no, you have to fight, you have to do your duty. But Balaram, he's Krishna's elder brother, so he already skipped out before. Of course, everyone has a different duty to do. So Balaram, by traveling all over Bharatavarsha, he went for supposed purification, but he purified the whole of Bharatavarsha by going around like that. That kshatriya mood, there's a fight, they become enthusiastic to join into it. That's the perverted reflection of that is, like we have the soccer hooligans, they like to go around and beat people up. But the original fighting is that there's a chance to fight for dharma. Sukhina kshatriya partha labhante yudham idrisham. As Krishna told Arjuna, come on, kshatriyas become very happy to get the chance to fight because they're trained for that. It must be very frustrating for all these armed forces. They train them to fight, and they never fight. And if there is any fighting, they don't have much to do anyway because it's all done by someone. I heard someone is sitting in Las Vegas and they're on the computer and they send a few, they're controlling their missiles in Iraq. So they go to 9-to-5 job, I gotta work, turn on a computer, have a look. And then, okay, time for coffee break, okay. That's modern warfare. So this is not kshatriya warfare. Kshatriyas, they like to fight. So as Prabhupada described, that propensity, that's there in the Supreme Lord himself. People like to fight. The Supreme Lord, he also, it must be, otherwise where does it come from? He also likes to fight. And the devotees like to hear about that. They take great pleasure. And here it's described how Lord Ram, he got those 10 heads of Ravana off without more growing back. That was the problem. You cut them off and think, I'm here again. So it's a very difficult job, but he eventually got them all. And then there's 10 heads and there's 10 directions, north, south, east, west, northeast, southeast, southwest, northwest, and up and down. So he was throwing them. There's one for Indra, one for Niriti, one for Yama. Throwing them, oh, very nice. I think it's very nice. That's wonderful. They like it so much. He's a demigod, he's in the mode of goodness. But they like to see the bad elements destroyed. They don't think that it's this foolish idea of non-violence, which only breeds more violence, actually. They say we should have non-violence. and then be nice to everyone. But then the people who are not nice, they don't believe, and then they are not nice to others. But because you're so nice, then you let them. But that's not niceness. That's foolishness. They should be stamped out. The bad elements, that's described. Nrisimhadeva killing Hiranyakashipu, that's described that. Mudeta sadurapi, Rishika sarpahatya, that why the demigods are happy to see Nrisimhadeva ripped to pieces. It's just like even a sadhu, a saintly person who is well-wisher to all, becomes very happy to see a snake or a scorpion killed. They become happy because they're disturbing elements. Of course, not every snake should be killed. You don't have snakes in Ireland anyway, only in the zoo. And hardly in England. But in many countries, snakes are, they're there. Dangerous. Just a short time ago, we were in Udupi, we were just all walking down to the temple, and one cobra came out. I said, it's a little greenish color. They seemed to me they're usually silver color. I didn't think of it. I thought it was just a green grass snake. I said, no, it's a cobra. Oh, okay. All right. So be careful. Dangerous. So, so many snakes. So a cobra, if you see, then should kill. If they come. But a grass snake, they just eat frogs and you don't bother. Why should you kill that snake? But the cobra is very dangerous. So you should kill. Or more dangerous in India, more dangerous. Not so common, but there's the black crate. Then if you get bitten by a cobra, there's a chance. If you're bitten by a crate, no hope. You don't live. So they should be killed. Otherwise, anytime they're envious creatures. Anytime they can just kill others, even without provocation, they'll just bite and kill. And scorpion also very envious. So even a sadhu becomes pleased to see them killed. A sadhu only thinks of the benefit of others. Sarva bhuta hite ratam, always thinking of the benefit of others. So I don't know exactly how this works, but it seems that by killing, someone has taken such a form because the jiva who is in the body of a snake or a scorpion is very envious nature, someone who is very sinful and violent and wanting to do harm to others. You can see in the eye. I remember once at the zoo I saw you in Copenhagen. That was 27 years ago, I know, because I just went there again for the first time after 27. They're asking, oh, you're here before? How long ago? And I was working it out. So I remember one time we were chanting our rounds in the zoo. And we said, he's in the crocodile. His eyes closed. He opens up his eye. And his yellow eye with this slit. And so envious. Just a look of complete, of course he was behind the bar, but very, very envious. So what? Some living being who's very, very envious, they can take such a body. So it appears that if they are killed, why should a sadhu be happy that any creature is killed? They have to, if they're killed, they suffer. They don't, but it appears that they may be like a murderer is killed if he gets released from his sinful reaction. So it seems that there's a diminishment of their sinful reactions by being killed. As Prabhupada, he was surprised when in Mayapur, the snake came out and everyone was, they didn't know what to do. Because normally in the Bengali villages, the snake comes and you kill. Even the children, they know, they catch them by the tail, smash them and kill them. But normally they're killed, but now they're Vaishnavas. But they're afraid what to do. And then Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur came and saw us and said, kill it. So then Prabhupada, he was surprised. And why? Why Guru Maharaj, the sadhu, said to kill? And then when he was reading through, he's reading through the Bhagavatam, then he came to this. Modeta sadurapi vrischika sarpa hatya. That even a sadhu is very pleased. Then his doubt was freed. It seems he didn't ask, but he had some doubt, maybe not a very big doubt, but that he couldn't understand it. He didn't reject him or think this is, he didn't make a campaign against him or anything. He had full faith in him, but he couldn't understand this. And when he read this, then he understood. So this Parashuram, so much killing. 21 times the Kshatriya race he killed. It means he killed them, and then maybe already their children are in the womb, just like Parikshit was already in the womb of Uttara when Abhimanyu was killed, so he never saw his father. So 21 times again, slaughtered, making pools of blood. And he's glorified. Keshava Dhrita, Bhrigupati, he's glorified for doing that. Vinashayata Dushritam, destroying the bad elements. And again, the Lord comes and does that. So it's, and the devotees are taking pleasure in seeing this. They're cheering, Varaha Dev. The demigods are coming out and say, kill him quick. Don't play around anymore. Kill him quickly. And they take great pleasure in that, so. Of course, that's not recommended in Kali Yuga. As Prabhupada said, if you try to kill, you will be killed. Even if we had the strength to do so, which we don't, if we had to kill all the sinful persons, where shall we begin? With ourselves? And then, if we're to kill, then we have to be as empowered as Parashuram only killed the Kshatriyas, but then we have to kill everyone, because everyone's very sinful. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who appreciated so much this Jayadev's writing, this is at the beginning of Sri Gita Govinda. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu relished hearing of the pastimes in Gita Govinda, of the intimate love of Radha and Krishna. But this is at the beginning of Gita Govinda, this Jayadev Goswami puts this. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so much appreciated this. He's the same Supreme Lord. And coming and giving the process for killing the sinful desires within the heart by chanting the names of Krishna is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's great contribution. At least previously there was some distinction. The demons knew we are demons. This Prahlad Maharaj addressed Hiranyakashipu, his father, as what is this? Yeah, well, I'm trying. What's the Sanskrit?
Rajasuna.
No, I can't remember. In another place, he's described as Daitya Kunjara, the elephant among the demons. Oh, what is it? I'm just not remembering now. So he described it, and he was, of course, Daitya just literally means the sons of Diti. But it was understood. There's the Adityas and the Daityas. The Adityas, they're the demigods. What do we call the demigods? And the Daityas, they're the demons. The Daityas and the Danavas. The two classes of demons. Asurya Varya, that's what he called him. Asurya Varya. Best of the demons. So yeah, it's Asura, he called him, Asura. Those who are not qualified to drink soma juice, Asura. So there's a clear distinction. But in the modern age, no one knows what is demon, what is demigod. They don't have the Hiranyakashipu. Even he had Hiranyakashipu, Ravana. They were scholars. They had Vedic knowledge. They knew. Nowadays, people, they're demons. They don't even know they're demons. And they're talking about being nice, being good, and humanitarianism and ethics. But they don't know. They're all demons. By Vedic understanding, Vishnu Bhakti Smrito Daiva Asuryas Tad Viparyayaha. That those who are devotees of Lord Vishnu, they are called Vishnu Bhakta Smrito. They're called Deva, demigods. And Asura means those who have the opposite mentality. They're not devotees of Krishna. So they don't know. It's considered normal, this meat eating, illicit sex, considered quite normal and acceptable, which even Hiranyakashipu, if you see, you don't see that, of course, he illicit sex one way, but another way, he maintained his wife. He didn't throw her out. So, in modern age, people, in one sense, they're more fallen than the demons of the past. Of course, no one can rival today. They complain about Hitler, but he was nothing compared to Hiranyakashipu. And in the modern age, people don't have the capacity even to be such a great demon, even if they wanted to be. But they don't have the power to be so, they may have the desire, but they don't have the power to be so nasty. But they're not even aware of what is wrong and what is right. Because to some extent, at least Hiranyakashipu and Ravana, they had faith in the Vedic knowledge. But in the modern age, people, everything is relative, relativism. There's no asatyam apratishtante jagad ahur anishwaram. Those who are demoniac, they don't accept that there's any ultimate truth. There's no particular basis to reality. It's just we're here and we should enjoy. Kimahur kama haitukam. What else is there but to enjoy life? What else is the reason for living? Kam specifically means sexual enjoyment. It's very prominent among the demons. So it's this relativism. Well, it sounds very nice to them. Yes, well, we respect every opinion and everything is nice and everything is good. But it's not. Relativism means that I tolerate you, you tolerate me, and you do your sinful activity and I'll do mine. And as long as it doesn't impinge on me too much, then I'll tolerate you and you tolerate me. It's a pact among unholy people. And it doesn't work, just like we're saying, they want non-violent, everyone should be nice and good. But we see that if you're not nice and good according to their concocted standard, then they'll, according to their political necessity, they'll invade you and bomb you and kill you to make you democratic, for instance, like in Iraq and Afghanistan, for humanitarian reasons, they decided to go in the country and, like I say, from Las Vegas, they can fire a few missiles here and there. So they've decided what is good. Vietnamese should not be communists. So, all right, we'll kill you all. We'll bomb you and firebomb you and all kinds of horrible things. So, They talk non-violence, but actually, the rule of this world is that if we're not Krishna conscious, then there must be, even if we are Krishna conscious, the very nature of this world is that there's birth and death and old age and disease, and for all our people will say, oh, what a lovely day today, because the sun is shining. But meanwhile, people are dying, people are diseased. Look at the beautiful countryside. The beautiful countryside means the birds are eating the worms. The foxes are eating the birds. the men are shooting the foxes. They have a big campaign. Is that still going on in England to stop the hunting of the foxes?
It's more or less resolved.
What's the resolution?
They came down with a ban.
They banned it.
But then people are still revolting, as usual.
So they're hunting anyway?
Some of them are hunting and trying to make political propaganda too.
But the thing is, if you don't hunt the foxes, then the farmers are going to shoot them anyway.
Hmm.
Because they're, you know, they kill chickens and they this and that. So anyway, again, it's so hypocritical. They're so concerned about the foxes, and they'll, but they're having slaughterhouses and chickens, millions of chickens. In India recently, there's this bird flu. So it came out that they had some case of bird flu in Maharashtra. And they killed some lakhs of chickens because they're afraid it will spread. So all the poultry farms in the area, they killed the chickens. That means hundreds and thousands of chickens. And some of our devotees are saying, see how they killed so many chickens. They're going to be killed anyway. They wouldn't have lived many more days anyway. There's hardly a chicken in the whole of the world that takes birth and dies a natural death. They all get slaughtered. Maybe if one runs out to the forest or something. Otherwise, they all get killed. Every chicken is slaughtered. So the people, they're making campaigns and speeches and save the foxes. There's not many foxes anyway. Not that many foxes. And meantime, they're torturing and killing animals. And then they're surprised. Then they're saying about terrorism. But you are the terrorist. You're also a terrorist. But it's done, but that is, among themselves, they've made a pact to say that this kind of terrorism is okay. We can slaughter animals, we can torture animals, but this coming and blowing us up, that's very bad. Well, we're not saying that the terrorism is very good, but it's not just by chance. And it's you say Islam is the cause, but it's more complex than that. If we examine in logic, there's always more than one cause. Just like the classic example is that, what is the cause of the pot? Here's a clay pot. Well, one cause is the earth that makes up the pot. Another, then it causes the potter. He decided to make it. And then who gave the earth? And who gave the intelligence? And then the potter, why is he making it? Because he needs to make some money, and someone needs a pot. They need to buy it. So there's so many causes. So you could say, well, Islam is the cause of terrorism. But there's another major cause is your terrorism. If we say that, people get very upset. But, yeah?
In Texas, the home of the beef burger and all the rest of it.
It's the main cow slaughter place in America.
30,000 every day.
30,000 cattle are killed every day. In normal day. Only in Texas. LBJ, all the way with LBJ. Remember that when you were a kid?
Yeah.
We used to see on Lyndon something Johnson. What's the B stand for? It doesn't matter very much.
Probably better
not. Anyway, he's probably one of the cattle now. He was a rancher. He's a Texas cattle rancher. And President of the United States of America during the Vietnam War. Is it surprising? Prabhupada said, because you are slaughtering the animals, therefore all the flowers of your youth, they have to be sent to some distant country to be slaughtered. That's how the law of karma works. So, it all sounds very horrible, and we paint little pictures of nice pastoral scenes, but this world is a horrible place, and it's full of violence. And in the modern age, it's increasing in so many ways. Prabhupada compared the educational institutions to slaughterhouses. That's a very heavy thing to say. I mean, people think, yeah, that's very good up here. The children are getting good education. But it slaughters the the tendency of the human being to search out Krishna. Pashugna, who will not hear about Krishna? Nivritta tarshai upagiya manat avoshodat chotra manobhiramat ka uttama shloka kunanavada. Kuman virajeta vina pashugna. Parikshit Maharaj says, who will not hear about Krishna? Who will hear about Krishna? Those who are, who've fed up with material life. They will glorify Krishna according to the parampara system. This is the medicine for the disease of material life. And it's very pleasing to hear. Shinu sukhadam shubhadam bhavasaram. Very pleasing to hear about the Supreme Lord. Very auspicious to hear about Him. But then, Uttama, who will not want to glorify this most glorified and glorifiable Supreme Personality of Godhead? Only the killer, that means animal killers and those who are trying to kill their own soul by being Mayavadis and merging into the imaginary oneness. So this violence, this inevitable result of a society that promotes sense enjoyment and not knowledge of, if there's not knowledge of Krishna, then there'll be so much violence. It must be. And they try to cover it up and say it's very bad. Another reason they think it's very bad is because they think that, well, we only have one life and so we have to enjoy it as much as we can. So that's why they also don't want capital punishment. They think that, oh, that's terrible, because that's it, that's all. He's finished. And they don't understand that, yes, there is another life. And this violence of the Supreme Lord is very good. The Lord, out of His supreme compassion upon Hiranyakashipu, very kindly ripped his chest and stomach to pieces while Hiranyakashipu was screaming in fear and agony. And that doesn't seem to make sense. He very kindly, out of His mercy, put him into screaming and agony. But that is His kindness. By doing so, He extirpated the tremendous sinful reactions which He was accumulating by the minute. Dying, seeing the Lord. So, it's very difficult for people. How will they appreciate? How will they appreciate? But those who are devotees, they'll very gladly hear this. They'll hear how Keshava, the Supreme Lord with beautiful hair, who is the controller of Brahma and Shiva, has taken all these wonderful forms. And now they will hear of how in His original form, He's dancing with Radharani, and then Radharani leaves Rasalila Shiva and Krishna misbehaves with her. She becomes upset. She doesn't want to see Him. And then He begs her that, you please forgive me. So this is seen how this Supreme Lord, He's prayed to by all the different demigods. He's lifting up the earth planet with His tusk. He's stepping over the whole universe in two steps, little dwarf boy. So many wonderful things He's doing, and now He's humble. Not that He was ever puffed up, but he becomes subordinate to the love of Srimati Radharani, expressed as her dissatisfaction at Him. So Hiranyakashipu was dissatisfied with Krishna. That was for His great benefit. And Radharani, who is none different from Krishna. The Bhaktisthan Sarasar Thakur used to say moiti, the two parts of the one whole. Not, of course, not only he said, but that's Radha Krishna Pranayavikriti Haladini Shakti Rasmad Ekatmanav Apipuvipura Deha Bhedam Kato To. That Radha and Krishna are one. They've become two for the sake of enjoying pastimes. So they are the supreme true higher. He calls Krishna the Radharani, the predominated moiety, and predominated half of the moiety, and Krishna the predominating. So that's from the point of view of, that's from Tattva-vichara. Philosophically, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, and Radharani is the supreme enjoying. Although from Rasa-vichara, Krishna is also subordinate to Radharani. And this is the beauty and the wonder of Gita Govinda. How he is so great, but out of love, he has become subordinate to Radharani. And this Rupa Goswami Prabhupada writes at the beginning of his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, I'm sure whoever reads that, I suddenly had this experience, whoever reads that, right near the beginning, Prabhupada writes in a very matter-of-fact way that Krishna is supreme, but even stronger than Krishna is devotion to Krishna, because by that Krishna himself is controlled. Shri Krishna Karshanichasaha. One of the six symptoms of pure devotional service, that Krishna, who is, Krishna means who attracts everyone, but he himself is attracted and actually controlled by the love of the devotees. So this is the theme of Gita Govinda. This is the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he relished that. How Krishna is controlled by love, and his all Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lila is based on this, his feeling, Radha Bhava Dyuti Suvalitam Nomi Krishna Sarupan. Krishna, forgetting that he is Krishna, no longer the supreme controller, but in the mood of Radharani, wanting to bring Krishna back to Vrindavan. That is the secret of Rath Yatra, that by Jagannath, the big Lord, so he is controlled by love, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, the cart is not pulled by the strength of the people pulling the ropes, but by the strength of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's love, he is pulling Jagannath. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is experiencing and demonstrating how love of Krishna is even greater than Krishna. So here, at the beginning of Gita Govinda, Jayadeva Goswami is very happily describing how beautiful is Krishna, how powerful is Krishna in his different incarnations. And then in Gita Govinda, he goes, this is the introduction, and those who chant this at the beginning of Gita Govinda, they will know. They will remember all these different pastimes. Just briefly mentioning, they'll remember, oh, how great, how wonderful is Matsya Avatar, how great, how wonderful is Kurma Avatar, how wonderful is Varaha Avatar, Narahari, and on. They'll remember hearing all this. And then their minds delighted by hearing about the greatness and the wonderful pastimes of the Supreme Lord, will hear how he becomes subordinate to the love of his devotees, specifically to Srimati Radharani. And this is how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was relishing this, and by distributing the names of Krishna, he was distributing this, as Prabhupada actually many times said, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching that how we can love Krishna in feelings of separation to Krishna. Of course, first we have to love him, then we can feel we're with him, and then the feelings of separation. Otherwise, anyway, we're separated. We're separated by our sinful desires. Our separation from Krishna is not like that of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's. Our separation is that we are in the material energy, and we don't want to think about him, and we're thinking how we can enjoy this material energy. So this kind of separation, that is not very laudable. But beyond the love of Krishna where we're with him is the love of Krishna where we're not with him. It's even the love of Krishna being with him is inconceivable. But then even beyond that, the love of Krishna not being with him. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has personally relished all these things and wants to distribute that. It's very, how to understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. Very, in some ways they seem very ordinary. In many ways it seems like we're doing more or less the same thing. We chant Hare Krishna, discuss about Krishna. So in many ways it seems very ordinary. But then we see that he's the Supreme Lord and he's become like in many ways like an ordinary person, and then he's distributing this highest thing to the lowest persons by the easiest method in the worst age. So definitely we're not going to understand it by getting a PhD in theology or in anything else. But we can understand it by his mercy. The poor scholars, they're analyzing and yes, and this is like this, and this is comparable to this and that, and they miss the whole point. That when we call out with love, premedako chaitanya nitai, when we call out with love, or even a slight drop of a tiny desire that I have, kobe hobe bolo shede nama, when will that day be mine? I have no love. I'm just calling out. When we can call out like that, even we can't call out that in love, but calling out that somehow, somewhere in my heart, there's some desire through many millions and trillions of so many material desires. Somewhere there is a desire to love you, Krishna. So please help me to come to that. So one who can even begin to call out like that, they can attract the mercy of Krishna. But, of course, scholarship, we're not against scholarship. There should be scholarship. But the scholarship just analyzing as if, you know, like some of the food analysts, they analyze a piece of meat or something and they say, this much vitamins and this much germs and this and that. Or some people, they analyze modern history or they try to predict the future, what will be the... And so they're analyzing so many things, and then some scholars, they analyze Krishna as if he's just another piece of meat or something. So they become... Even though they may learn so much about Krishna, but they become offensive by doing so. Whereas devotees, they study with great awe and reverence. How wonderful is Krishna? They study. Prabhupada said there are two kinds of questions. One is to understand Krishna, and the other is to avoid Krishna. So we can ask that, oh, how is it that Lord Vamandev, How could he do that? How could he cheat Bali Maharaj? How can he treat his devotee like that? So if we ask like this, then the devotees will be very pleased to explain what are the crooked exchanges of love between the Lord and his devotees. Ahariva ayam premna. It's not straight. You don't know what's going to happen next. That makes like the movements of a snake. It's talking about snakes again. They move. They don't move straight forward. But their bodies twist like this, and then they gradually move. So, like that, love of Krishna is like that. You don't know what's going to happen next. But someone else may ask that. They may ask the same question, but they may say that, what you're saying is God, and he treats his. How can you say he's treating his devotee? He's very good, and he surrenders to him, and he treats him so badly. It's the same question, but a different mood. So, the mundane scholars, they may learn so many things, but by their attitude, they go further and further away from Krishna. Just like you're telling me, someone, you were speaking about Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, how he's a great follower of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and one of our devotees who's become a big scholar said, no, actually, there was a rift between them, and they were Bhaktisiddhanta opposed Bhaktivinoda Thakur. What nonsense and rascaldom. But they'll, those who see from the outside, they might see like that. They don't see that how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, everything he did was only for fulfilling the desire of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And everything he did was specifically on the order of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And the first thing he did after the disappearance of Bhaktivinoda Thakur was start to publish his unpublished manuscripts. And they would have, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the knowledge of him would have been lost in this world if Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur hadn't publicized it. He organized annually big festivals or meetings, bringing all the big intellectual elite of Calcutta to discuss about the contributions of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Of course, there was another party who thought that this Bhaktisiddhanta, he's not following Bhaktivinoda properly. So they would come also. And then one of his disappearance day festivals, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur noted that, well, this year those people didn't come, so that's very good. Better without them. So somehow or other they have their representatives, even in the modern age, who will always find fault with the great devotees. And they'll deliberately miss it. They don't know anything about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They take some statements of his and which they say, well, he's very mild compared to Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. So they'll take some of his statements which are made for just, you know, trying to bring people in to some level of Krishna consciousness and take this as the absolute level or the highest teaching. And they'll reject Bhaktisiddhanta. No, he wasn't following Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, everyone should be a grihastha. So why is this Bhaktisiddhanta making sannyas? Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying better be a grihastha than this cheating kind of so-called babaji, renunciate. But he was never against the actual renunciation, which to surrender fully to Krishna. But he was saying, don't be a renunciate, because everyone was just cheating in the name of renunciation. They couldn't, or they might try, but they didn't know how. They couldn't, but the Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur showed how that can be done and should be done. And he made wonderful sannyasis. So, and that's become a crime, because they take as an, what Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave as a necessity in that situation, they take it as an ultimate principle. That's the typical neophyte foolishness, is that they don't understand the basic principle, and one acharya states something which is required for people in that situation, and they take that as the ultimate principle. And then when another acharya comes and institutes something which is different from the adjustment that the previous acharya made, they can't recognize. And they say, oh, he's not following properly. He's the only one who followed properly. The others didn't understand him at all. As Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, that even some of them, they've learned every word, they can repeat verbatim all the teachings of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They haven't understood a single word. So, very difficult for people. And people, how are they to understand? If we'll tell them, what is God doing? He's just like a juggler with the heads of Ravana, throwing one here, one up there, one down there, cutting off the heads and ripping out the stuff. That's not bad. One so-called Christian in India once said, what is your God always killing people? Our Jesus is the Prince of Peace. So, external vision. They can't see very deeply. What is the ultimate good? Even they'll say, we should stop war. But that war may be very good for you. That may be required for you. You're not serious about spiritual life. You're spoiling your human life. You're going on making more and more sinful activities. And then some war, maybe that'll make you start to think that actually, what's going on in this world? Maybe that's required for you. If that's, God is all good. So if there's a big war, then that's also, that's, why is that? That's required for you. It's not just, it's not that God is unjust. If people hear this, how will they understand? They won't understand. One has to come deeper. But they generally people think that God's duty is just to, if at all there is God, His duty is to provide our sense gratification. And if He doesn't, then He's no good. Or we won't believe in Him. You don't do what I say, God, we won't believe in you. Then you'll cease to exist, because your existence depends upon my believing in you. So, Krishna consciousness is not... Always people ask us, well, what do you believe? Prabhupada would never even accept that question. What do you mean, belief? What is it? Belief? What is this belief? People think that what do you believe? As if, you know, who the hell are you to believe? What does it matter what you believe? What is the fact? Prabhupada would always say, this is a science. What is the fact? We say, well, I don't think God can be like that. It doesn't matter what you think. God is not dependent upon what you think. You're such a fool that you think that God is some concoction of your mind that you can change according to your opinion. People don't understand. We are dependent on Him. He is not dependent on us. He doesn't need us. We need Him. And what do we need Him for? Not for supplying our sense gratification, but for understanding that we are meant for His sense gratification. He is not meant for our sense gratification. So those who are devotees, they will chant the Shavasastra Stotra. They will relish this. And those who are very advanced, which, if you don't mind me saying so, almost certainly doesn't mean any of us in this room, they will relish hearing Sri Gita Govinda. We have to come to that level, not artificially, but those who are actually advanced in Krishna consciousness. And again, by saying, no, I have to be advanced, then we hear, I have to become advanced. So we're thinking in a material way. I have to become advanced. I'm not going to be a low-level devotee. I'm going to be a high-level devotee. And we artificially try to go up just with a material consciousness of showing that I have to be advanced. But the whole concept that I have to show I'm a better devotee than you, that's, again, it's material. Our duty is simply to serve, and our advancement shall be as much as we increase the mood of how we have to serve. We have to do what Krishna wants us to do. Not that artificially we shall. No, I have to be the topmost one. I have to be a gopi. I'm not going to be anything else. I'm only going to be a gopi. Gopis are the topmost. Uddhava was praying to become a blade, some herbs in Vrindavan. And we're going to be bigger than Uddhava? I'm not going to be. Arjuna, he's not very advanced. Bhagavad Gita, that's not. Such an offensive mentality, this idea. I have to become. We are more advanced. We're only interested in gopi leelas. foolish, long, long way away from even beginning, even understanding what is the beginning of Krishna consciousness, and very foolishly thinking they're very advanced. Anyway, we won't discuss that more now, because Hare Krishna. I think we'll finish here. And all glories to Srila Prabhupada. And does anyone want to make any question or say anything? You want to say anything? And what is the time?
People are given great accolades in medicine for performing open heart surgery.
Mm.
But they don't appreciate Lord Srinivas's efforts.
Yeah.
We give each other great Nobel Prizes
for
open heart surgery. Lord Srinivas is the best.
Yeah, he ripped open the heart of Hiranyakashipu. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood is concerned with the heart. Heart surgery. Change of heart.